This week on Greener Us, Desmond Tutu's eco-friendly cremation, climate scientists obsess over data, and salmon return to Northern California. Hello and welcome to Greener Us. This is Chris Syracuse. And you'll notice in that intro there, it sounds more like news headlines, which they are. So what I'm going to do on the weeks that I can't come up with a topic, like a specific topic that I can talk about by myself for at least a half hour, or find a guest to bring on to talk about whatever it is they do. So in the weeks that I can't get either of those, I'm going to bring you some news. So almost all of these major media establishments have a beat that is climate, environment, sustainable living. Most of them call it climate change, which we can certainly talk about that and the problems with that. But let's go ahead and jump into it. The first thing I've got for you is Desmond Tutu. So Desmond Tutu was the anti-apartheid leader, Anglican Archbishop in South Africa. He died, I guess this was in the beginning of January. So this is from NPR. It says, a plain pine coffin, an eco-friendly cremation of the last acts of Desmond Tutu. So what happened here, and you know, RIP Desmond Tutu, don't know much about you, but in this picture here, in this NPR article, he's got the same glasses as me, so I think we have some kind of kinship there. So what this eco-friendly cremation that NPR is talking about, it's called aquamation. And this, scientifically speaking, the process is called alkaline hydrolysis. It's a combination of gentle water. This is according to Aquamation's website. I guess the company that does this, or BioResponse Solutions, rather, they call the process aquamation. So a combination of gentle water flow, temperature, and alkalinity are used to accelerate the breakdown of organic materials. So the reason that I wanted to talk about this story is because this is a perfect example of humans thinking that the most environmentally sustainable solution is one that requires some kind of design and overthinking and overdoing. Because really the most eco-friendly burial or eco-friendly send-off is to just dig a hole in the ground, pull all the clothes off of somebody, throw them in there. I mean, it's pretty much that simple. I don't know. I don't mean any disrespect to Desmond Tutu. But if we're really thinking about it, it's like, why? Why are we trying to mimic these natural processes? Why don't we just actually let them happen? That's the most eco-friendly way. But anyway, whatever. People are probably into it. So we've got another NPR article here. This is from last week. And it says, to get by in a changing climate, plants need animal poop to carry them to safety. And I thought that was always the case, that's how seeds were dispersed. But apparently now, because of the threat of a changing climate, that is even more important. So the article goes on, and they talk to this ecologist from Rice University. His name's Evan Frick. And he says, there's always this poop angle to my research. PhD in bird poop, basically. This is him talking about his research. And so the article goes on to talk about why birds eating fruit and dispersing the seeds through their poop is important, and why it's especially important because of the threat of climate change. Now, this gets to a couple things. The first thing is that there is this belief, and I'm starting to talk about it more on this show because I think it's really, really important. There is this belief that the climate is changing only because of humans, and that it is our responsibility to stop it, that we can fight climate change. That's what you'll hear a lot. That's a lot of the type of language that's used around this discussion, which is just absurd. I mean, it's just absolutely absurd that we are going to fight climate change. Now, you can have a reasonable discussion about whether or not humans have exacerbated the rate of a changing climate, right? And I tend to believe that, yes, of course we have. You know, industrialization, as you know, my opinion, if you listen to this show, my opinion is that industrialization generally speaking, has been disastrous for humankind and for the ecosystems in which we live. But this idea that we are going to fight a changing climate, it is the wrong way to frame it. Because as I talked about, I think a couple weeks ago, that really what we should be saying that we don't want to poison our environments. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Stop having the debate about whether or not the climate is changing. It is changing. Okay, get over it. It's changing. Now you can have that political argument, that political debate that is going to go nowhere about whether or not it's changing because of humans, exclusively because of humans, or mostly because of humans, or not because of humans at all. That does not matter. The only thing that matters is that we adapt and we don't continue to poison our environments. That's it. So to all my friends, all my former colleagues on the left, all of these climate change scientists, climate scientists, or people like this guy who studies poop for a living, stop. Seriously, stop. This is not the argument and discussion to be had. The argument and discussion to be had is whether or not people want to continue to poison their environments, not whether or not the climate is changing and what our responsibility in mitigating that or fighting it or stopping it is. It's absurd. So that's the first point. The second point is this very obvious paradox here that these people, when I say these people, I mean these types of researchers, their entire existence is predicated on the existence of these kind of problems and figuring these things out. If they actually solved these things or actually, you know, figured these things out, they would have nothing to do. I mean, first of all, why are you even studying this? To me, it seems like such a waste of time. It's like, is it not good enough just to know that these processes exist? It's cool. It's interesting. Move on. But no, of course, because we live in this society where we are obsessed with data. We're obsessed with knowing. We're obsessed with figuring things out. We have to pay people like this guy, this researcher from Rice University, to study bird poop. Like, okay, man, come on. Add some real value to the world. This is not it. This is not real value. Again, because the whole thing in this case, in this article, the whole thing that you're trying to support as far as the argument is this idea that we need to fight climate change. It's even more urgent because the plants that depend on birds to spread their seeds, they're being threatened. They're being threatened and we have to help them. So then the article goes on to talk about this idea of assisted migration. So basically humans would come in, land managers would come in and plant seedlings in locations better suited for them in a future climate. Again, just I appreciate the fact that humans can increase vitality and increase the life force in a given area and the ability for humans to interject in ways that are positive. I think that's really cool. And there's a lot to that when you think of ecosystem restoration. But again, it's part of the same problem and the same mentality, which is it is exclusively because of us that it's happened. Now it's exclusively and only on us to fix it. And I don't know. I just don't agree with that. The fact that these people think that the planet is dying, I mean, that's just absurd. I mean, we're the ones that are being threatened here. You know, it's human life. It's our continued like quality of life and our continued ability to get the resources that we need in the places that we need them that is being threatened, not the planet. Planet's going to be just fine. So there you go. Let's move on from this article because this guy is fucking annoying, as you can imagine. A researcher from Rice University who studies bird poop, as you can imagine they would be. So next up, we've got, this is from the Washington Post, and I'm gonna pull from these establishment media outlets. As much as I used to respect them, now I see just how unbelievably biased they are and how much they're pushing this very specific narrative and how hard they're clutching to it. it's kind of sickening. So I'm going to, this is going to be part of what this is about, is me calling that shit out. And also, to be fair to them, you know, when I see encouraging stories and I see, you know, things that I think are going in the right direction, I'll give them credit and I'll make sure to be fair about it and be balanced, fair and balanced, right? As Fox News says. So this is from the Washington Post. It says countries' climate pledges built on flawed data post investigation finds. So this is all about, and this is from late last year. So this is all about the supposed discrepancy between what countries are reporting as far as their carbon emissions and what the quote unquote actual numbers are, according to the Washington Post. And I'm not going to get into the nitty gritty of this because it doesn't really matter. It's the same stuff. It's climate scientists saying that what we're doing is not enough, that we've got to continue to cut emissions. We know if you don't believe in climate change, you don't believe that climate change is because of humans, you're spreading misinformation, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're a Donald Trumper, you're a racist, right? All that stuff. They're not actually explicitly saying that in this article, but that's the narrative, right? That if you're not on board with this, then you're the enemy and you're all these horrible things. So, but this exposes an even deeper philosophical problem, which is kind of what we talked about just a few minutes ago, which is we are obsessed as a culture and as humans, we are obsessed with data. We are obsessed with analysis. We are obsessed with figuring things out and knowing that we know, right? And these climate scientists, they kind of epitomize that attitude. Because they and these people from the Washington Post, too, you know, they really believe that they are the arbiters of truth. You'll notice, I think this was a few years ago, like right around when Trump took office, the Washington Post changed their little tagline. Now it says, "Democracy dies in darkness." And I remember, you know, during the Trump years, I was thinking, oh, wow, you know, good for them. Good for them, like standing up for democracy. Now I realize like how unbelievably self-righteous it is. And how they're framing themselves as we are the arbiters of truth. We will tell you how to live. The rest of you plebes, the rest of you uninformed, you know, you people out there, you just follow us. Follow us into the light. I mean, it's pretty sickening. Anyway, that's a little aside there. But this, what I was saying, this article really gets to the core of it. And the, like I said, this philosophical challenge that we have and that we're going to continue to have, that's just going to get worse, which is, what do we do with all of this data? So first of all, data, as we are all seeing, data, as is sometimes said, is the new oil, right? This is the information age. That data is as valuable as water or as oil, which, I mean, whatever, that's not really true, maybe financially speaking, but regardless, data is incredibly important. But there are a couple really, really big problems or potential problems there with this obsession with data and obsession with analysis. The first is, how do you know that the data that you have is even accurate? You know, all of this is an approximation. Even the most experienced, the most knowledgeable people on a subject, they still are just getting a small piece of it. You know, it's just an approximation. So that's the first problem. The second problem is, when you're empowered by all this data, and say you can, you know, you can validate the veracity of it and say, yeah, we feel pretty confident that this data that we're going off of tells us a certain thing, and we feel confident in making certain decisions based off of that. So assuming that you do that, why is it that we think that we have the power to change all of these things? Now, maybe it's because historically we have, but that again is the problem. We have had the power to change all these things. So why, and we've seen in a lot of cases what that does to us as a species, as individuals, as a society. So why are we going to continue to do it? Now, in this case, I mean specifically about interjecting with the climate, for instance, or designing and building all of these tools and these new systems and processes to mitigate these threats that we think are happening or that are happening, right? But that again, that's part of the disease, is that we believe that we can engineer our way out of it. You know, we can have, if we have enough data, if we know enough, if we design it properly, if we do it perfectly, then we'll be able to engineer our way out of this mess. And I don't believe that's how it works, or I don't believe that's going to serve us well. This idea that we need to use new technologies to sequester carbon. Well, depending on what the technology is, that could have all kinds of different complications and challenges and problems if we do that in a way that is not really in line with how the ecosystems and how physics on this planet actually work. That we, and this is a theme that we always see with human beings and our big brains and our ability to do these things, which is we get ahead of ourselves and we think, oh, just because we can do something, we should. Right. And if you talk specifically about the sequestration of carbon, there was this really funny tweet. So this was, I can't remember what it was. I think sometime last year, Elon Musk, he was giving away some amount of money to a person or a company that could invent the best carbon sequestration technology. And he sends this tweet out, and it was this kind of funny meme. Somebody responded by saying, yeah, they're called forest, right? And that, to me, that captures it, which is why are you building all these things, engineering all these things to get us out of this mess, which the building and the engineering and the overthinking created in the first place? You already have carbon sequestration technology in the form of forest and in the form of different algae and seagrasses. The system is already there. It already works in that way. Why do we think we can do it better? Anyway, so all of that to say that this article here from the Washington Post, I completely got off there, but this article here about the supposed discrepancies between what countries are reporting and what the actual numbers are. I mean, first of all, who gives a fuck? Who really? Like, who cares what the Washington Post says? Who cares what the Washington Post is reporting? Does it really matter? I mean, really, does any of this really matter? The fact is, we all need to use less. The fact is, there's going to be something catastrophic that happens that puts us back into check. I mean, we've seen these things. They've happened throughout time, but I think we're really at a point where the planet will put us back into check, and that it'll all be taken care of. So these people at the Washington Post, these climate scientists, they just need something to fucking do. You know, everybody needs something to do. Everybody needs something to fight. So there you go. That's my take on that. I'll link to these articles too, so you can read them if you're curious about the numbers. I don't know why you would be. Great. Governments are corrupt. Sure, of course. Yeah, they're not reporting properly. Big surprise. Thank you, Washington Post, and thank you for being the arbiters of truth and giving us the real numbers. Thank you, Washington Post. So moving on, here's some good news, some happy news. This is from The Guardian. It says, rains bring salmon back to California streams. And they're talking specifically about the endangered coho salmon returning to spawning grounds in Northern California. So up north of San Francisco and Marin County. And this is really cool. You know, I love to see this. I did a show with some folks that are working on the LA River restoration, specifically aimed at creating fish habitat in near downtown Los Angeles, which is pretty incredible. So I did an episode with them last year, and Yeah, I really do love to see this because, you know, I may talk a lot of shit about some of these folks, but I really do appreciate when scientists are working towards real ecosystem restoration and bringing back biodiversity and ecosystems. It's my opinion that it should be done in a way that is very simple and as unintrusive as possible. Getting back to the article, some good news with the California salmon, and glad to see that my friends and family in California are getting some rain, starting to alleviate some of those drought conditions. So that is good to see. I do think I'm going to point this out here, and you can see this if you go to the article. This is a picture of these two gentlemen standing outside in the forest, and it's Todd Steiner, executive director of the Turtle Island Restoration Network, speaking with Preston Brown, director of Watershed Conservation for Salmon Protection and Watershed Network, SPAWN, that's the acronym. And these two dudes are standing in the forest, it appears to be at least 6 feet away. And one of these dudes is wearing a mask. Why? You're in the forest. You're in the forest with a couple other people around. Like, what the fuck? When I see pictures like this, I am very grateful that I am not back in California. And very grateful. As much as I love that state, you know, it's my home. Well, was my home for a long time. You know, it's where I'm from. But like, what are you doing, bro? You're outside. You don't need a fucking mask. You're in the forest. Anyway, so that's that. But hey, nice job. Bring those salmon back. I don't know what you guys are doing. You guys didn't really do anything. You're just standing there talking about it. But anyway, so check this article out. See some pictures of the coho salmon. Get a little good news going into your week. So moving on, we've got this is an article from the AP. It says, Justices weigh limits on the reach of the Clean Water Act. So this story is, let me just distill it for you. This is about a couple, Chantel and Michael Sackett. And they've been wanting to build a home in Priest Lake, Idaho for 15 years. And they've had this long legal battle about it, because basically what's happening here is the EPA, it's the Environmental Protection Agency in the States, ordered work on the Sackett's property to be halted in 2007 because they decided that the property where they were, that this piece of land where the Sacketts wanted to build was wetlands, and that it couldn't be disturbed without a permit. And now it's going to the Supreme Court. So this is all about how much federal regulation can do in regards to watersheds. So the Clean Water Act is pretty important when it comes to protecting, you know, clean water sources for communities. But this to me, I don't, there must be something else going on here, because why this couple in this, what I'm assuming is a pretty remote part of Idaho. I mean, Idaho is almost all remote. So it seems to me that there's something else going on here as far as with this story. I'm not sure why the federal government is so worried about a three-bedroom home or a proposed three-bedroom home in some remote part of Idaho. I think this is really about the core fight that's going on here, which is how much control should the federal government have in individual Americans' lives? This is really the philosophical debate that's happened from the very beginning in American politics. I mean, this is what it's all about, is how much control should the federal government have, especially when it is very possible. Let me be clear. It is very possible that this house would in some way impact this wetland area, which me having the opinions that I have about ecosystem preservation, yeah, that could potentially be a problem. But is it the federal government's job to come in and regulate that? I don't know. That's where I have a hard time with it, because as I've discussed before on this show, that it seems to me that a lot of these people that live in these more rural areas, you know, they have a much deeper connection to the land than, say, some bureaucratic agency or, you know, some specific bureaucrat in D.C. It's just, I mean, I don't know. This is a tricky one. So we'll see where that one goes. I'll definitely circle back on this and give you an update. I got to note this because this is so typical. At the very end of this AP article, it says, and this is quote, it's a quote directly from the article. Separately, in 2015, Michael Sackett pleaded guilty to coercion and enticement of an underage girl and served less than a year in prison. Like, what the fuck does that have to do with anything? This is, again, they have their narrative. They're gonna stick to it. They're not gonna be so explicit as to say that what they think, but we can tell by the way that this article is written, and especially that part at the end there, what they really think. They think it is absolutely the federal government's job to tell these people what they can and can't do to keep them from building their home, regardless of what's actually going on at a, you know, at a ecological level. Because, I mean, why would you put that in there? That has nothing to do with this case, nothing to do at all. I mean, the guy may be, you know, some pervert, maybe some sleazeball, but what does that have to do with this? Nothing. Anyway, typical. I'm realizing how much fun I'm going to have picking on these establishment media outlets, because they're fucking absurd. The more time and space I get away from America, you know, the more distance I put between me and all that bullshit. And now that I'm coming back to it and looking at it with a fresh pair of eyes, I'm realizing how ridiculous it is. So thank you for joining me. Hopefully this will be as much fun for you as it is for me. I don't know. That we'll see. We will see. So again, thank you for listening to Greener Us. The show lives in the same feed as our companion series, What's What, and our weekly music show, Vias Radio. By combining these three shows in one feed, we offer an audio experience that is unique in the podcast world. So you can stay right here for stories and information about Earth Conscious Living, conversations about philosophy and literature, curated music playlists, and more. If you like what you hear, please follow us on Spotify, and don't forget to give us a 5-star review. If you're interested in visual and written content, check us out on Instagram at Greener Us Media and on Twitter at The Greener Us. I will see you next week.